Welcome back to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and very excited to be speaking with the newly appointed, hot off the press, just a couple of hours old, Lindsay's more than a couple of hours old, but the announcement that Lindsay Allen will be at the helm of the Rainforest Action Network as the new executive director. Very exciting, and I pride myself, have always, for the last 15 years, on getting the latest green news on. And now that most of the mainstream media is starting to pay attention to climate change and other important issues like preserving our rainforest, it's even more exciting because hopefully more people will be tuning in not only to programs like this, but also signing up to be members of Rainforest Action Network and just all things, you know, eco, climate, environment. They really are all of our concerns. We all have a role, and hopefully that is starting to penetrate mainstream consciousness, and we do our part here to try to bring those leaders to the forefront, the green front lines, in fact, therefore the name of the show. And welcome to it, Lindsay.
Thanks so much. It's great to be back.
Congratulations on your post. We did talk to you, I believe, some months ago about your work, you know, fighting for issues like the rainforest, for all things that make sense in terms of protecting our climate, which is so embattled, so endangered, and on all those fronts, you've really done some great work at RAN over the last couple of years, since 2010, I think. You've been running the forest. What's the official name of the division that you were in charge of?
Yeah, the forest program.
That's right. What I thought. I thought there might be something a little longer, but no, the forest program. And, of course, Rainforest Action Network is focused on the rainforest, but what a lot of people may not realize is it's not just about saving trees. But that's certainly a very important, noble, and critically important goal.
Yeah, we started our work by looking at how to protect rainforests, and part of what we did that was unique to Rainforest Action Network is we were committed to partnering with communities and helping them assert their rights, because now, as science has shown us again and again, communities that have rights are actually the best stewards of the land, as opposed to, you know, coming in and pushing people out even to get protected areas. And then we also, as Rainforest Action Network, took on corporate offenders. So instead of waiting for political willpower to enable the government to act, we went directly to the companies and said, we know you're consumers, and we don't think that they'd be supporting this. And so that's how we started. And then, of course, now climate change is a major threat to rainforests, and we're committed to working on the energy side as well. So we're taking on the finance sector for supporting the coal industry, and we're fighting the Keystone Pipeline, and so that's an important element of the work that we do also.
And just as climate is a tremendous threat to the preservation of rainforests and the health of rainforests, of course, losing trees, losing rainforests contributes to worsening climate change.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're really focused in on the rainforest of Southeast Asia, and particularly Indonesia. And what's interesting that most folks don't realize is that Indonesia is the third largest greenhouse gas emitter in the world. They're behind the U.S. and behind China. And it's not because of, you know, because they're flying and transporting and they have massive coal-fired power plants. It's actually driven in large part by deforestation, because the forests that they have there are so dense in peat, which, you know, after decades, we all know becomes coal, that they're burning these rainforests to clear way for these massive plantations to either plant pulpwood trees that we turn into things like toilet paper and newspaper, or to plant palm oil plantations, which produce now the world's cheapest vegetable oil and is found in roughly half of the products that you can find at a grocery store.
Well, you and RAN have had some amazing victories against some of the biggest corporations in the world, including Disney, Nike, Kimberly-Clark, and Timberland. Is that one of them as well?
Yeah, I worked on the Timberland campaign, actually, when I was still at Greenpeace, and in an effort to preserve rainforest in the Amazon, we took on the cattle sector. And so we looked at companies that were using leather and meat that were coming from slaughterhouses that had bulldozed their way into the Amazon rainforest, where there were 75 million head of cattle on deforested lands. And so we went to these leather companies like Nike and Timberland and said, you have a responsibility to be part of the solution and to not support these companies. And so they refused to buy from companies until they supported a moratorium. And it was part of this cattle agreement to stop any buying from companies that were continuing to drive deforestation into the rainforest.
And isn't Timberland a pretty green company overall?
Overall, they are, and it was surprising how, it took them a bit of time to realize that they weren't green in every aspect. And, you know, we had some tense early conversations where they said, listen, we're a good company, you know, pick other targets. And I said, that can absolutely be true, and yet on this issue, you're getting behind and you're not leading. Nike actually came out with the policy before they did. Mm. So, you know, that's part of the conversation that I think we need to have with companies, and it came up in the case of our Disney campaign here at Rainforest Action Network, where, you know, they don't always believe that they're doing the wrong thing initially, and sometimes they need a bit of convincing while in a meeting and showing facts and evidence, and sometimes they need us to show up outside of their headquarters dressed as Mickey and Mickey, locking down the gates to the entryway so that executives can't get in without reading the sign that says rainforest destruction is no fairy tale, to make sure that they were not using paper that was coming from rainforests.
And I've been covering this green beat for long enough, 15 years and counting, that I remember when this is what happened to Nike. They were getting all kinds of bad press, well-deserved, for their sweatshops and not-so-green
practices. Absolutely.
And that's when they became sort of the poster child for corporate turnaround. And now here they're leading a company like Timberland, which really has seen itself and I think had a public image as a pretty green company. And you're saying exactly the point, that not really on all fronts, especially if you're going to hold yourself out to be, you know, a world leader in your space.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it will be the same challenge that we'll see as we take on our latest campaign, which is looking at the top 20 food companies in the U.S., snack food companies, who are using palm oil as a hidden ingredient in their products, which is something that most consumers don't realize is connected to deforestation and is, you know, is threatening species like the endangered orangutan with extinction. That this product is being put into snack foods, everyone's buying them, and, you know, there's going to be a real test to see how these companies react, and if they say, yes, we have a problem and we're committed to doing something about it, which is the precursor to the conversation, or whether they say, you know, turn a blind eye and hope that it goes away. And our assumption is that even those companies who are just hoping it goes away will realize before too long that, you know, the network of people that makes up the Rainforest Action Network doesn't consider that to be an acceptable response.
I'm glad you brought up palm oil. That was my next area of focus. I read a couple of weeks ago an article in maybe The Economist or Bloomberg, one of the business magazines that my husband gets that are increasingly, thankfully, covering climate and other environmental issues, as, you know, they should, because they are mainstream issues, of course, and have a business and economic component, all about the social justice aspect of the whole palm oil, you know, extraction and the whole, you know, crisis around human labor and abuse there.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, we found that there was a supplier to Cargill, a company named KLK, who was connected through one of their subsidiaries to using forced laborers. And it's pretty shocking how uncovered this aspect of, you know, the impacts of palm oil is, because even the U.S. Department of Labor has listed palm oil from Indonesia and Malaysia as having a high risk of being produced with child and forced labor. So we took all of this information and we did an interview with two people who escaped. We called on Cargill to block suppliers that were connected in any way to forced labor and child labor, because they are the largest importer of palm oil into the U.S. as a major global agribusiness commodity trader. And, you know, we were able to work with Bloomberg and a network of our allies in Indonesia so that they could get onto the ground and investigate. And that report finally came out just a couple weeks ago, and it confirmed and went even farther, deeper into the accusations around forced labor on these palm oil plantations. You know, and what we found is that palm oil is a beautiful example of all of the things that have gone wrong with industrial agribusiness. It pushes people out of their community lands. It destroys rainforests. It has climate implications with the emissions. You know, it's using forced and child labor It's displacing smallholders who are trying to produce on a local level. And so this really is something that we see as critical to tackling.
Yes, and I wonder if the demand for palm oil has gone up since the demand and use of trans fat, partially hydrogenated fat, has gone down. In this country especially, it was omnipresent, it seemed, in any kind of crackers, cookies, snack foods that needed to be preserved for a long time. And it was actually a friend of mine, Stephen Joseph, whose father died of a heart attack at a young age because Stephen discovered had eaten so much margarine, and he began this ban trans fat campaign about 4 or 5 years ago, which I talk about often as, you know, a wonderful example of how one person can make such a big difference. And so I was kind of shocked to think, oh my gosh, what if that, you know, well-intentioned campaign and you know, something that does good for public health is actually the reason that we're seeing palm oil become increasingly commonly used. Is there a connection there, or am I
there is. you're absolutely right. So we saw a spike in the U.S. consumption of palm oil after there was a trans fat ban. But I think, you know, the work of your friend that you mentioned is still critically important. The problem is that companies, instead of thinking through and finding a real solution, they found a Band-Aid solution, and it's not a really ecologically or, you know, from a human rights angle, it's not sustainable. So instead of saying, you know, maybe we should produce food that is actually healthy for people, they said maybe we can find something else that when you process it in a certain way, you know, you fractionate palm oil in a certain way, you plug and play. So you take out the trans fat, you put in the fraction of palm oil. You don't have to rethink that your problem is still not good for people to eat. And so part of what we're doing at RAN is when we engage with these companies and when we engage with consumers, we want people to think about, you know, we want people to think about the entire ecosystem that they can have an impact on. So the way that I talk about it is, there are three times a day when you're sitting down to a meal where you can choose to have a meal that reflects your values. And, you know, I think that people have had this in mind, you know, those folks who are vegetarian and vegan have this in mind quite a bit, but everyone can make this decision at every meal. So when I sit down, I'm not going to buy a processed food and eat that and feel good about the health to my body or the health to the environment or communities. I'm going to think about, you know, I want my meal to be locally produced, low climate impact, you know, low in pesticides, et cetera.
And is palm oil perhaps not as dangerous from a health perspective as trans fat, but, you know, is it healthier or as healthy as something like coconut oil, which is not only, we're finding, you know, quite good for us, but I imagined, well, I don't know. I shouldn't assume anything. You tell me what's happening with the harvesting of coconut oil since it's now the rage, as is coconut water, coconut juice.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's challenging because I'm not a food scientist, but, you know, the way that palm oil is being used in products is in many cases to prolong the shelf life. And that's not something that rings true as healthy to me. So when I think about healthy, I think about, you know, all the things that we've talked about, greens, things that are fresh, things that are giving you vitamins, whole grains, et cetera. And, you know, while it's debated right now in the health community, we're seeing more and more evidence that palm oil is not good for you, and particularly not when it's used as an additive in these processed foods, which is why part of the reason why we're really targeting the snack food sector. Because they're not giving great value to us as, you know, living, breathing organisms through the products that they're making either.
I think this was your quote. I love it. It's from a former interview. It's a pretty disastrous plan to be losing rainforests, disassociating people from their homes and communities, and contributing to climate change, all to grow the world's cheapest vegetable oil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our assumption is that part of our role is to get that message out to people and put tools in their hands so that they can continue to tell others about this, because our assumption is most people would not make the choice to have those types of negative consequences if they realize that they're doing it and that there are other options.
Lindsay, you have big shoes to fill in stepping in for the late, great Becky Tarbutton, but I think you're going to be able to do it or come close. I'm really encouraged to see your new position there. And thank you so much for what you've done so far at RAN and what you're about to do. And it's really one of the best groups out there, the boldest. And I know that will only continue to grow your influence.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. And I really appreciate, you know, you covering these issues and taking time to speak with me.
You know, it's the best beat there is, and I don't know what's taking mainstream media so long to figure that out, but it's only our health economy, our, you know, entire ecosystem, civilization as we know it, that's hanging in the balance. So maybe soon we'll have a show like this on some network outlet and continue to be on the Internet, of course, as well. That's where all the really progressive things are happening, but that shouldn't be the case. That's one of my pet peeves here. So thanks for joining in. Thanks for being on the program. And, again, congratulations on your just announced new appointment. We really appreciate your being with us on short notice.
Yeah, thank you, Betsy.
That does it for this edition of The Green Front. If you joined us in progress, please see the archives at thegreenfront.com, also on the PRN website. Thanks for the studio back in New York. I think I'll be broadcasting from there next week. I haven't told them yet, but I'll be in New York City bringing my daughter to college at NYU, so hopefully we can do the show live from the studio. That's always fun to do. See you next time. In the meantime, have a great green week. But we can turn it around if we just come.